Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck. When I'm gone, just carry on, don't mourn, rejoice every time you hear the sound of my voice. Just know that I'm looking down on you, smiling, and I didn't feel a thing. So baby, don't feel no pain, just smile back. When I'm gone, just carry on, don't mourn, rejoice every time you hear the sound of my voice. Just know that I'm looking down on you, smiling, and I didn't feel a thing. So baby, don't feel no pain. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. There's Kanye West, 50 Cent, Jay-Z, but still, arguably no one as big in hip-hop as Eminem. The rapper's latest album, Curtain Call, The Hits, was certified double platinum after selling more than 2 million copies in less than 2 months. But one thing that Eminem has not been able to do is to generate a new wave of white rappers, as many had predicted. Why? We've invited two guests to try to answer that question, both of them joining us on the phone. Jim Farber is the music critic for the New York Daily News. Touré is an author and journalist whose forthcoming book is called Never Drank the Kool-Aid, a collection of essays about American hip-hop and pop music. Jim, Touré, thank you both for joining us today.
How are you?
Jim, let me start with you. In 2003, you wrote a cover piece for the New York Daily News called The Changing Face of Hip-Hop, in which you predicted a white rap invasion. And there were, you know, several names that you threw out as evidence of that. What happened? Or more to the point, what didn't happen?
Yeah, it's really what didn't happen. I mean, the people that we mentioned, it was a female rapper that was being touted for a while as Feminem, it didn't take off at all. The labels didn't support it, and the audience wasn't interested. I mean, the one person who's come up since is this guy from Houston, Paul Wall, who's, you know, been, I guess, the most sort of credible white rapper who's come in that time, but he's really more credible coming from the Houston scene than from anything else,
right?
You know? And he does not rap about being white in general. He doesn't call attention to it. There are probably people who don't even know that he is.
I was just going to say, until a couple of weeks ago, when his name came up for like the third or fourth time on this program, I didn't know he was white. I mean, when you first wrote about him, did you realize?
Well, I had known, you know, because I'd read other pieces about him. When I had heard him and not known.
Yeah.
There was that surprise.
One thing that's interesting, though, I mean, Paul definitely does not discuss his whiteness the way that Eminem will always say it first in this way of, I'm taking all the venom out of it, I'm saying I'm white, now you can't diss me for that.
Right.
And Paul never mentions it, but interestingly, his wife is black, you know, which is just one of those little telling things, you know, about where his head is at.
Well, I think to, you know, to your question, I mean, the biggest issue here, I think, I don't know what Touré thinks, but I mean, probably, you know, obviously in hip-hop, realness is really important, you know. People want to feel that they're getting the real thing, and it did start, and it's still overwhelmingly an African-American art form.
That's exactly right.
And so I think, you know, if you contrast that to, say, blues music in the 60s, where the audience was at a very different place, they did often favor imitators, you know, from England or from America. Now it's a very different world, and that's not the case anymore.
I think what you want as a listener of hip hop is to feel a trip into the black community, and even if it's Paul Wall, a white person giving it to you, he's still taking you into the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And most white rappers don't really try to do that in the same way. And also, to be a white rapper in this, the same as being a black person at IBM or anywhere else in Fortune 500, you have to be twice as good as all the black men around you. And Eminem's skill is so extraordinary. He's way better than almost all the black rappers alive, and way better than every other white rapper around.
So Paul Wall here, he's from Houston, and let's hear a little bit of his music, and then Touré, maybe we can talk about how the, you know, black fans of hip-hop have embraced somebody like Paul Wall, or, for that matter, somebody like Eminem. Let's hear a little bit from Paul Wall and They Don't Know. What you know about Free Pimp C? What you know about the Swisher House, man? What you know about the SUC? We keep it player. Ain't no fame, but we hold a flex whenever haters hate. We listen
in the music, screwed and chopped. Down here in this Lone Star State, out of towners be coming around, running their mouth and talking down. But you don't know nothing about my town, either hold it down or move around.
They don't know what that's all about. They don't know what that's all about. They don't know what they can't ignore about.
All right, that's Paul Wall. We're speaking with both Jim Farber, music critic for the New York Daily News, and with Touré, the author and journalist and author of the upcoming book Never Drank the Kool-Aid. So, Touré, what do you think?
First of all, I think you should, at some future point of the show, you should play Sitting Sideways, because that's the one that you just can't get out of your head. And one thing I love about
Are you playing Paul, DJ? Are you being a celebrity DJ here?
Absolutely. And one thing I love about Paul is his diction and his ability to paint a picture. But the bigger thing here is that what you see in modern white rappers like Paul and Eminem is they're not in blackface, right? If you look at MC Search and Vanilla Ice, they were very clearly in blackface. They were pretending to be black men, and they were had such a love of black culture that it seemed that they wanted to be black. Eminem and Paul are of this modern generation of white people who grew up, young white people, who grew up in a culture that is dominated by black men. They understand that they're white. They understand that they're, to some extent, interloping, but to some extent completely belong there because they grew up in the culture. So there's a respect for, I'm a white guy doing this black thing. I'm not trying to be black. You know, I'm trying to be white within this black world.
So then why haven't they opened the doors, and especially Eminem, who's had a 7-year run, which in the world of hip-hop is an eternity.
It's like saying, why hasn't Tiger Woods opened the door for more black golfers? Is there anybody on the planet who can golf like Tiger? No, and there's not that many people who can rhyme like Eminem.
Right.
Other people who tried to do it in a different way are British performers, you know, like the guy who goes under the name The Streets, you know, has been able to come at rap from a completely different viewpoint.
The Streets is not a rapper.
Well, he raps.
I mean, you're right, and I'm right. I mean, the Streets is a penguin, you know, as a bird. The penguin doesn't fly. The Streets doesn't really rhyme. He's not really a rapper, but he calls himself that.
He is speaking in rhythm, you know, and he's not singing. And he, as I said, he's completely redefined it, though. He's coming from, you know, a British working class viewpoint. There's also, you know, an act in Wales who are really a comedy act, Goldie Look and Shane, you know, who rhyme to an extent, you know. But I think, you know, the thing with them is they've tried to do something completely different. They're not imitating anybody.
Goldie Look and Chain has that song, Guns Don't Kill People, Rappers Do.
Yeah, but it's brilliant.
Hilarious.
What about rap rock? Is that where all the would-be white rappers are? Are they in bands like Linkin Park or following in the footsteps of Kid Rock?
But those culturally come from such a different place. I mean, and none of those guys, Kid Rock or the Limp Bizkit kid,
Fred Durst.
Fred, thank you. None of them have anything at all approaching skill. I mean, they couldn't last within the hip hop arena 60 seconds.
Yeah. They're clunky, and also it's been downplayed. I mean, you know, first of all, the whole trend in rap metal has sort of gone by the wayside. Korn don't really, you know, for who's big, don't really sell anymore. Limp Bizkit doesn't sell. And if you're talking about Linkin Park, who do sell, they've linked up with Jay-Z, and also there's an awful lot of singing in what they do.
Right,
you know, there's not
right.
that much rapping anymore.
Although, you know, Jim, you mentioned the mashup with Jay-Z. I mean, that certainly must have given them a fair amount of street cred, to have attracted his attention.
No, but it doesn't. I mean, Pavement Records aren't selling on the R&B charts. I don't hear in Brooklyn guys say, oh, wow. Jigga rhyme with Pavement, I'm going to check out their album. Like, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jim, what about someone like the Beastie Boys? Mm-hmm. I mean, where do they fit in?
But, you know, they're also not really selling anymore. But they did something very different. I mean, first of all, you know, it's a really long history. Now we're talking about 20 years ago when they first started. And it was, you know, a punk at that point, basically. And then they went through everything from, you know, Latin music to, you know, kitschy 70s soundtrack music and became Buddhist. I mean, there's just so many different things they've been through. You can't really label them as any one thing anymore.
I mean, they were such a clear parody at the beginning.
Yeah, but that changed.
It didn't feel threatening. Mm-hmm. To the hip-hop fan. I know when Eminem first emerged, it appeared threatening because he was so good and people felt, oh my God, it's going to be a bunch of white rappers now.
Right.
And the Beastie Boys were such kids. They were so playing around. Mm-hmm. that it was like, okay, we'll let them be part of this world.
Well, they certainly fought hard for their right to party. Here's a little bit from the Beastie Boys and then more of our conversation with Jim Farber of the Daily News and with the author Touré. Jim Farber, you talked about how the Beastie Boys have changed over the years. You compare this early song with some of the more authentic-sounding rapping that they did much later on, and mm-hmm. they really did develop, you know.
Well, they also began to, you know, play instruments and, you know, and a lot of different instruments. So, they went through, it's kind of an amazing arc they went through.
They have had an amazing arc, and I don't think that their musical journey is done by any stretch. They have improved as musicians. They have improved as artists. They have not improved as rappers a bit. They were never very good, and they're still not very good.
All right. Now, Touré, you said that when Eminem came out, there was kind of a sense of threat among the African-American hip-hop community. Is that part of what is keeping... Is that part of what's keeping the white man down?
Keeping the white man down. That's hilarious.
And please take it as hilarious. Because
The thing that Eminem does, he's very much like Madonna, especially in her early years, in that Madonna and Eminem understand that if you create hatred, enemies, an out-group, then the in-group will love you so much more intensely. And it's so much more fun being part of the in-group when there is an out-group, an enemy. And he, as like Madonna, would say things to annoy people, and that would create these enemies. But he was very smart. He would attack people who had nothing, who couldn't attack back. So homosexuals who have no power within the hip-hop community. Women who have little to no power in the hip-hop community, NSYNC, Jessica Simpson, Britney Spears, you know, these are easy enemies. He says the B word, but he doesn't, except for his misguided rhyme when he's 15, he doesn't say the N word. He doesn't even play with those sort of things. So he's very much clearly dealing with the white side of things. But the thing that I always loved about Eminem from day one, so much of hip-hop is a black pathology, right? Discussion of black men saying, I'm going to shoot you over this plot of land, which neither of us own or will ever own. Eminem, now we're talking about white people pathology, white trash pathology, trailer trash pathology. I'm loving it. Let's have more of that discussion.
Well, he's also playing victim all the time, which is really popular with people. You know, with everyone
and
is out
bully.
Yeah, everyone is out to get me. You know, and it's become less and less credible over the years. You know, and at a certain point, you're like, who exactly are these enemies? You know, critics really like him. He's hugely popular. It became harder and harder. You know, Elton John has forgiven him. You know, it got to the point where you thought, like, who exactly doesn't like you?
It's interesting, actually, because his two prime enemies, he's recently lost one. Mm-hmm. All the albums, he's always talking about his mom and his ex, Kim. And he just remarried Kim.
Yeah.
So he can no longer diss her or make songs putting her in the trunk of the car all cut up and... He'll always have his mom, though.
Yeah. Well, we always have that.
None
of us ever get away from that.
We're speaking with Jim Farber, music critic for the New York Daily News, and with Touré, author and journalist, about the paucity of white rappers. Is it a fact, Jim, do you think, that there are just not that many white rappers out there, or are they out there and the industry, for some reason, has decided not to make a big effort to try and launch their careers?
That's interesting. I'm not quite sure the answer. I would think that the you know, part of it is the industry, you know, with the assumption that the audience is not that interested. As I said before, it goes back to this idea. It's very interesting to me, as I said, to compare it to, you know, pop culture from 20 or 30 years ago, specifically comparing it to the blues, where imitators were very much accepted or even favored, in fact. And it's very interesting to see the culture come around to the point where that's not true anymore.
You know, I've always felt like if somebody could create a group, a threesome of white girls who would talk about girl stuff, not pretend to be boys, that would kill. That would be multi-platinum on the Mitzvah set alone in a week.
If they look like the Pussycat Dolls or something,
right,
it would be really...
Why wouldn't they have to have some sort of legitimacy within hip-hop, like hoodies, not like makeup and like perfect ponytails, sneakers, not heels, but like, you know, that could really... So I think there is a market, but I don't think that there's that many good white rappers in America. I mean, I think that when you consider the artistic concept of steel sharpened steel, the black men who grow up in Brooklyn or in Compton or where there's lots of rappers around them, they can become much better. And I don't know if you have a lot of white rappers who have those same sort of resources, which would push up, you know, I mean, like Jay-Z comes out of the Marcy Projects. He wasn't the only rapper there. He was just the best one there.
Yeah, but Touré, the fact is that hip-hop's everywhere now, and you could be living, you know, in the nicest part of the suburbs or in the tiniest burg out in one of the square states out west and still be, you know, exposed to hip-hop. I mean, it's just such
really?
A part of our culture.
Not just listening to it on the radio. I'm talking about I have people that I can go and sit with and talk with about my rhymes, about my flow, about my subject matter. I mean, Eminem and his friend Proof would do drills. Mm-hmm. They would call each other at 2 a.m, and one would suggest a certain rhyme pattern, you know, like short, long, long, short, and we got to go on that. And every rhyme has to rhyme with tango. And they would do that for half an hour, you know, and just building up skills back and forth with each other, critiquing each other. And then they could go to the chop shop and have a battle
right. And
lose or win or see some, you know. And when you're in an underground culture of it like that, you know, it's
so you're saying it's not so much the, you know, I grew up in a bad neighborhood where people were capping each other, you know, every night. And it's more about the technique. It's about learning the art, the skill.
I think we say, yeah, I come from Compton, I know the gangs. Okay, but can you rhyme? If you can't rhyme with flow, words, diction, tone, all those sort of things, then so what? You're from the gang, you know? I mean, it's the same reason why lots of great basketball players come from Chicago, Detroit, New York, because there are already lots of great basketball players there.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim, you've mentioned a couple of times the analogy to the blues back in the 60s.
Right.
It seems that there's very little risk of hip-hop following the fate of, you know, the blues and its musical child, rock and roll, where it started off as a black form and, you know, then came to be identified as a white style of music.
It's because we live in a different world. The world has changed at least to that degree, you know, where black stars can be thought of as mainstream stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just there's not that same self-consciousness of like, oh, we've got it, we absolutely have to put a white face this. And maybe in a sense of like, we'd like to, but, you know, but it's not that sense that it has to happen anymore.
Well,
you know, the world has opened up at least that much.
All right, well, you guys both know that the world is not just black and white. Touré, what do you think of Latino hip-hop? I mean, it seems like there have been some fairly successful excursions by that community into the hip-hop realm.
You know, I don't really think so. I mean, Big Pun has been a great rapper.
Mm-hmm.
Fat Joe has been okay. There have been a couple other Latinos. But, I mean, you know, they are all, most of them are coming from a place of black and brown collective struggle, you know, social and political collective struggle. You know, but I want to go back to your previous point because Jim is right. The faces on stage are probably always going to be dominantly black. But from the 80s to now, the face of the audience has changed almost completely. I think in the mid-80s, we were, you know, 80 to 90% we'll say 80% black and brown, and now I think the audience has got to be 80% white.
Yeah.
And that has changed fundamentally the sorts of people who can get on stage, the sorts of people who stay on stage.
And we come back to our first question, which is why has that not produced an equally fundamental change in the people who are on stage making the rhymes?
Because they want, because they come to hip hop to experience blackness.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Touré, the author. His upcoming book is called Never Drank the Kool-Aid, and with Jim Farber, who is music critic for the New York Daily News. Guys, a very provocative conversation this afternoon. Thanks, both of you, for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In a moment, the story of Syed Darwish. He was a champion of women's rights, a cocaine addict, and, not incidentally, the father of modern Arab music. This is Soundcheck. You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Soundcheck.